Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. Hi, friends. I couldn't be more excited today than to bring you Mary Gaucher, who's performing Saturday night, June 13th at Vachon Center for the Arts, VCA. Mary is a Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter, celebrated for her unflinching honesty and soul-stirring songs. Drawing from her own life experiences, she crafts music that resonates with truth and vulnerability. With collaborations spanning Leonard Cohen to Tim McGraw, Gaucher's artistry bridges folk, Americana, and country traditions. Now, truthfully, I didn't know Mary's work. I probably heard it on the radio or heard it on Spotify, but I didn't know about Mary until I read the promo from VCA. But a friend told me that I had to hear her and I had to read her book, Saved by a Song. And oh my God, I've gone from somebody who knew very little about Mary to a super fan in just 1 week. It's been amazing. I feel like I've been on a journey with you, Mary. And thank you so much for being with me because, you know, it's funny, you haven't heard me, but I've been hearing you every day.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you for listening to the book.
Well, there's something, I mean, it is amazing to hear the audiobook. I have the book as well, but the audiobook brings everything to life through your voice. And that kind of raw, real, I'm just talking to you folks, tone that you have, it just comes through the book. And then you include your music and your words. Oh my God, that book is, it's breathtaking.
Oh, I love gosh, it. Thank you.
I love it so much. And so let me, you know, I don't have a particular order for this, but because I'm starting with the book. Well, first of all, let me tell people a little bit more about you because I feel like I know a bunch. The book is part about songwriting, but it's also part memoir. So I know about your birth that you were given at birth, that you call yourself a foundling, that you were a runaway, that you became a chef, that you became an addict, that you truly hit bottom, ended up in a jail cell, and then climbed your way out. And you went into recovery, you became a songwriter in your 30s, no less, which apparently is old in the songwriting world, but certainly not old for me in my 70s. And then you've gone on to becoming a celebrated songwriter, the beloved by so many. So I know something about that path. Because you give so much of yourself in your songs, they're not all about you, but they often have a bit of you. Why was it important to also write a book?
Well, I'm a songwriting coach and teacher, and I work with adult songwriters a lot, and I felt called to write a book about what I teach, and to be honest, I was given a book deal, and that is motivation. So
that's great.
Yeah, I wanted to sort of reach more students than I could possibly reach in person. And I wanted to talk about how music and song for me has been far more than just entertainment. You know, I think the art form is a very powerful art form for a transformation and healing if it's used in such a way to do that. And so I tried to articulate what I mean by that. And that's sort of the under story, maybe, or the, you know, the subtitle of the book is art and healing, you know.
So much so. And to do so, you had to go back through your own personal story to set a context.
I'm a good example of how it can work that way. Yeah.
Right. Nobody could read your book or probably listen to you without feeling the healing power of song. And it's part of what makes your music for me is so needed in these days. Because, yeah, there are a ton of songs out there, but we need songs that will remind us of who we are, that'll take us into our hearts, that'll drop us into a place that maybe we've forgotten about for a little bit, and heal us, and I have to say, maybe help us heal this world, because that's the kind of songs we need right now. And I don't feel, now you're in the songwriting world, so you know it a lot more than I do, but where are those songs? Because it feels like maybe in the 50s and the 60s, we had songs that were inspiring us to a new world. But right now, it feels like so much of the music world is commercial and entertaining, and it's harder to find those songs that just rip you apart and remind you of what it is to be human.
Yeah, they're out there. They're just harder to find. Like you said, the commercial music business is such a loud megaphone. It drowns out everything else. So you got to go looking for this kind of thing. There's hundreds, if not thousands, of us doing this, but we don't have the megaphone that the commercial music industry is in possession of. But there's artists that I know personally who are doing exactly what you describe and have always done that. They're friends of mine, you know.
Yeah, I bet they would be.
we're out here in the sort of the, I wouldn't call it underground, but certainly it's off the beaten track. In earlier days, people like us had a opportunity to reach more people because the gridlock of commerce was not fully locked in yet. So some of these kind of songs could actually get on commercial radio, and that's just not true anymore. It's commercial radio is escapist. You know, I describe music as escapist, like you're getting away from the struggle, or you're heading into the struggle and trying to articulate it. And the escapism has sort of the Disneyfication of music has such a just a gridlock on the music industry, because that's what apparently people want. And you know, I mean, there's lines at McDonald's, you know, this is not just a music problem. People, lowest common denominator, quick and easy, that seems to be a thing is always going to sell. So
yeah.
the non-commercial stuff, which I think of as myself as not a commercial artist, I'm more into the art than the commerce.
Yes, I hear
and
that.
So I think we're out here. You just got to look for us, and you got to know where to look, and that's hard.
Yeah, well, I love how you refer to yourself as a troubadour, with an emphasis on the true. But it was a great reminder that the troubadours are out there. They've always been out there. They've been out there throughout history. But right now, like you say, they're getting a little bit, you have to listen for them. But oh my God, are they needed? When people call, you know, I love that thing that you quote where people, didn't Rolling Stone call Mercy Now one of the 10 saddest songs either of the decade or ever, I can't remember. There was a quote that you offered about how sad it was. Am I right on that?
Yeah, it's one of the top 10 saddest songs of all time, and
I love that.
I found that to be an honor and a misnomer. I don't think it's a sad song. I just think it's a real song.
I love the distinction you make between sad and real, because I sat with that quote and I thought, having listened to Mercy Now a lot, I found it incredibly uplifting. It's like a prayer song, you know, and you wouldn't call Amazing Grace, oh, that's such a sad song. No, you go, Amazing Grace is speaking to our hearts and lifting us up. And I think Mercy Now has that kind of quality to it.
I think so too. And I think it's startling to people who have saturated themselves in escapist entertainment. It's like, yeah. Whoa, don't make me feel, don't make me think, don't make me cry. That's sad. Well, you know what? Sometimes tears are a relief. Sometimes tears, you cry because you've been seen and heard, and because you're being brought to something deep inside of you that's been locked down. And somebody just applied a key to the gate, and now it's coming up and out, and your humanity is showing. That's not sorrow. That's empathy. And in a empathy crisis, which we're 100% in, the experience of it can be startling.
Amen. That's so my experience. And I have to tell you, I sort of cheered and cried my way through your audiobook, but I was not sad. I was never sad. In fact, I was really happy, because it felt like when you crack open to that part of you that maybe has been a little numb but remembers what it's like to be human, it's like, praise the Lord, you know?
Yeah.
I'm opening. And in that opening, you maybe feel sad for a moment, but it doesn't. It's not the same as feeling sad, depressed. It's feeling real, like you said. Is it hard to go on stage time after time and go back? And I don't actually know what your performance is going to be, but since so many of your songs are about your life and there are places where your life was really difficult, or you have met people who have experienced real difficulties, is it hard to go on stage and go back into that time and time again? Is there a time when you would rather be happy? Just say, let's sing a happy song.
No, not at all. Not at all. Because here's why. These songs are alchemy.
Yes.
They take the struggle and transform it into something that is uplifting.
Yes.
These songs don't end in sorrow. They end in hope.
Yes.
I know that's what I'm bringing to the audience. And I know that alchemy, this type of magic that art does, is present. It's not reliving the struggle. It's emphasizing transformation.
What a great distinction. Thank you for that. You know, I was moved by the whole book, but particularly moved by your chapter about the songwriting with soldiers. What did you call it? What was the project that brought you?
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I worked for a little over a decade with wounded veterans using music and song.
Oh my
to
God.
Help alchemize the trauma of war and some of our wounded veterans.
I was particularly interested because I was working with storytelling some years ago, and I was so moved by what was happening to some of the women vets, particularly coming back from Iraq. And so I worked with one to tell her story, but it was so difficult. And I wish I had had a guitar and a song, because it was so painful. How were you able to metabolize that level of pain without getting stuck in you?
I think the songs themselves, the melody, the music, it drives the story to a conclusion that is validating. And that validation, I think, is empathy. And the empathy of the song helps, I think, alchemize the trauma. And so it's very different than trying to write long form with someone who's got war trauma.
Yes.
And our female veterans in particular have suffered such abuse.
Yes.
And I didn't ever work with a female veteran in the 10 years that I did the work that wasn't sexually assaulted by a fellow enlistee in the same uniform. And that's just so shocking and startling and horrible. I mean, you're in a war fighting an enemy, and you have to also fight your fellow warriors off. We've got a real problem in our military, and nobody's addressing it at the level that it needs to be. And so our women veterans come back with so many wounds and scars, and so writing with them, I try to get the anger, you know, the rage, that is a propellant, and the camaraderie that they have for each other, that's a propellant. I just try to find a way to bring them into a place that is not just the horror, and there's metaphor and melody and ways of doing this that we have tricks up our sleeve as songwriters, and these are powerful things. And so many people just want to be seen, heard, and known.
Absolutely. And the way you describe, you know, the end of a songwriting session where you sing to the group the soldier song, that made me so teary just to think of the transformation, you know, the feeling that lives are being changed in that moment.
Yeah, they are, because they're seeing each other maybe for the first time. Because look, this level of vulnerability is discouraged, if not shamed, in the military. And when they break through that wall of shame and allow themselves to be seen, and their fellow warriors reach for them and say, "Me too," there is something there that gives you, I think, a reason to live. It brings you hope.
It does. It does. And I love the scene that you had with, is it Josh Geertz? Is that how he says his name?
Yeah, Josh Geertz.
At the Opry, and the idea that then he was taking what he had gained from the work out into the world to support vets and to address the issues of suicide, which are deadly, you know?
We've lost more veterans to suicide than we lost in the horrifically long wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's a hard number. We lost more to suicide than we lost in, I think, the 18 years of conflict in Afghanistan and Iraq. So that is a crisis. And we've learned nothing, and now we're in Iran. So this cycle just goes on and on and on. And we sacrifice so much. These songs just tell the story of what these people go through. And that's what the job is, to tell the story. Just tell the story. We don't preach. We don't take a political stance. We just tell the story. People can make their own decisions based on the story.
Right. And then you worked with doctors and medical staff during COVID.
I did, yep.
Which is amazing.
Yep, same thing. We helped tell the story. Yep.
To a group that was severely being traumatized and yet being told that they had to be strong and tough it out because that was what their training told them to do.
And yep.
You know, when I was reading this is just a sidebar, but I was thinking, It's a little different because this group isn't necessarily tough, but I was thinking, I wish Mary could work with trans kids, you know?
I'd love to, yeah. There's a lot of them. A lot of them are coming to my shows now, the young mm-hmm. trans kids or non-binary kids.
Yeah.
And I just love them. I love them so much. I think they're so brave.
Yeah.
It would be very cool to write songs with them because they have a story that's worth telling.
They sure do. And for them to feel your enormous heart and know that there was somebody who had their back and who loved them, you know, that's really powerful. And then to have a song come out of that, that's so...
It's a great idea. Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah. Now, your songs aren't political, although... They're not political, although they do speak into the heart of what's happening sometimes when you're talking about what happened to Yvette or even, you know, there are lines in Mercy Now, which are amazing because you wrote the song over 20 years ago. And I listened to it and I feel like you're talking to us now because there's some line in it about, you know, leaders who want to keep their crowns.
Yep. You know what I've learned as a songwriter, maybe even as a human? The truth doesn't change over time. The truth, you know, that's why Shakespeare is still relevant. It's why Hank Williams is still relevant. The truth of what it is to be human, what it is to deal with the powerful, what war does, these truths don't change. The struggle of love, the struggle of parenting, the struggle of coming of age, these truths are solid and they don't change. And so... Right. If you can get to the deepest truth, you've nailed something that is indeed timeless.
Yes. Now, a lot of your songs have come out of different parts of your life. Your recognition that you were a foundling, you're struggling with relationship, struggling with parental issues and all. But it sounds like maybe you're in a good relationship now.
I'm in a great relationship right now.
Jamie's there, and it sounds like things could actually be happy, you know?
Things are pretty darn happy around here. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Can you write from that happy place?
Yeah. I don't have to write about myself constantly. You know, I've got all kind of characters that are talking to me. And when I do write from myself, I can write from the eyes of someone who has such gratitude, you know, that I've finally found a place for my heart that I can rest, you know?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Hallelujah for that. Because that's the other thing that I experience in your songs. I feel like here's my three G's. Grace, grit, and gratitude.
Yeah, you just nailed me. That's me.
Yeah. And the gratitude, which I always feel there, you know, it's like even when you're talking about your worst times, the gratitude is part of what lifts us up, you know, and says no matter what, you can still find that place of gratitude, even though you might have to work for it sometimes. But now with Jamie and a better relationship and this, it's great to be able to celebrate that sometimes it works, you know?
It is. And the gratitude almost always has grit because you're grateful in the sense that you've made it through something, that something hard has been transcended, that there's, you know, the storm is coming to an end. There's light coming in. There's a sense of magnificence. Grace is always part of the story too. There's another G for you.
Yeah.
That there's grace, an unmerited, unwarranted gift that has arrived. Even if it's just, a nice sunny morning or a beautiful rainy afternoon, awareness of grace can often bring gratitude.
Absolutely. What are you writing into these days? Or I know you're touring, so you've got a pretty full schedule, so you may not be writing, but I wonder how you're approaching these times, and I'm going to give you my read. It's not necessarily yours, but I feel so brokenhearted about the level of greed that's out there, the kind of numbness that some can have so many and some so little, and what we're doing to people, whether it's abroad or with our immigrants, with our trans kids, that kind of breaks my heart, you know, and I don't see the way out. So are you writing into that? Is there anything that's going to come out of Mary that can speak to these times?
Absolutely. I got a new record coming out in September.
Ooh.
And I'm directly addressing those concerns.
Wow.
It's called Reckoning. And I believe we are headed for a reckoning. And it's a, you know, what is a reckoning? Well, it's a dramatic confrontation with consequences. I do see a way out. I think the universe balances itself and there's a hidden hand. You know, I read some Pablo Neruda, and he has a line that I'm just holding on to. It just spoke to me so deeply, and it goes like this: you can cut down all the flowers, but you cannot stop the spring. I hold on to that. Neruda saw some things, and he saw some horror, and he still was able to come up with hope. I have the same sentiment. We're due for a reckoning, and it's coming. And when it happens, we'll know it's here. You know, that old axiom, is slowly then quickly. It's gonna turn on a dime, and towers are gonna fall, and not the ones in New York. I'm talking these imbalances are too great. It's not sustainable. So I don't know how or what, but I do have faith that this is going to change. We can't live like this, not forever and not much longer. So that's what I'm writing about.
Yahoo! I can't wait. You going to sing any of those on Vashon when you come?
Oh, I just can't stop myself. Yeah.
I can't wait. And that was another piece in your work, even though you're not overtly religious, and you came out of some Catholic background, but you're not preaching at us or telling us what to believe or anything like that. But there's a heartfelt spirituality in your writing that feels so real to me. You know, that place where you just say, I don't get it. If you want to give me a hand, you can give me a hand, and let's trust that there's grace for everybody out there. You know, just some kind of raw faith. Does that resonate with you?
Well, my spirituality is based in recovery. You know, I got sober in 1990.
Yeah.
I've stayed sober. That's 37 years of sobriety, and I've seen transformation. I've seen people walk from the lowest of lows into a much better life over and over and over and over and over again. I've seen despair flip into hope. I've seen the possibilities that are always right there for folks who are willing to do the work. And so my spirituality comes from grit. You know, it comes from not a theology, but from walking the streets and seeing what's possible. Yeah, there's horror. Yeah, there's people every day dying of addiction and losing their battle with the demons. But there's also people like me who have walked through it and managed to find a stronghold that can keep them sober and clean. And the ripples of that are expanding ever outward. That's what my spirituality is built on.
I love that. And in one last little bit, you're in Nashville, you know, hub of the country, and perhaps, I'm not really sure the difference between country and Americana, so whatever. But you're in a hub that is commercial, and often people have associated, at least out here on the West Coast, some of the country music with being pretty socially conservative and pretty anti-LGBTQ. How do you make your way in Nashville? Does that bug you at all? or is it just something you just let go and keep going?
No, I play at the Grand Ole Opry a lot. I'm the first openly gay person to play the Opry. I made my debut there in 2002, I think.
Yeah.
They've always been nice to me. They've always embraced me. They've always known who I am. I've never been in the closet. I don't hide. I'm not ashamed. I bring my songs. I bring love, and I get love back. Country music's going through a conservative streak right now. There's going to be a backlash against that. There'll be artists that aren't that. We have many. Nashville's solidly blue. Tennessee's a red state. Nashville's a blue city.
Yeah.
Nashville has a huge gay community. We have some
really
incredible legislators that are fighting for us. Gloria Johnson, Justin Jones, Justin Pearson from Memphis. These young people are real fighters in the spirit of Dr. King. And they're out there and they're doing hard work. Is it going against the tide of what's happening? Yeah, but they are leaders, and they're just getting started. Hell, they're in their 20s. You know, we're stereotyped as one way, but let me tell you, it's diverse.
Yeah,
and we have an incredible mayor, a liberal Democrat, and Tennessee's tough. Nashville is fighting.
Yeah.
We have a huge gay pride parade. It's coming June 27th. It'll be massive this year just to piss them off. And we're going to truly join hands and keep the fight. You know, I don't despair. I work. I work.
You work.
That's
last
right.
question. You, how old are you now, Mary?
64.
Yay, 64. Because I'm real interested in how our creativity expands as we get older. And I know that, you know, aging is great and aging has a price. And one of the prices is losing friends. And over the last years, I don't know the whole of who you've lost, but I know John Prine left us, Nancy Griffiths left us, and probably a whole host more. How has aging, and maybe that little dimension of loss, shaped you creatively? Has it influenced you?
Lord, yes. You know, the losses are incredible and massive. And I wasn't prepared for it, and nobody is. You don't expect that as you get older, that they start coming at you hard. It makes the urgency of now more urgent. Mm-hmm. It makes me very aware of the value of the love that I have for the people that are still in my heart and with me in this mortal coil, and it makes me want to work my butt off, because I know that I'm closer to the end than the beginning, and I have more to say and more to do. So, and I take those that have passed with me, you know, Nancy Griffith, Guy Clark, John Prine, David Olney, the list goes on, Rahul Mallo, Todd Snyder. These were my friends, my peers, my buddies, and the losses are very genuine and real in my heart, but I know that I carry them with me in a tangible way, and that's what I've got. You know, it's what we all end up with, is the people that we love. We keep them alive in our heart.
Yeah, we do. It's that. I was thinking about the song you wrote with the soldier, where you talked about the guardian angel.
Yep.
And how a lost friend can become a kind of guardian angel to you. I love that image. Well, you're not slowing down, it appears, because your touring schedule is dense and you have a new album coming out. I mean,
that's right.
And you're still writing, Lordy B. You know, it sounds like you're going stronger than ever. Yeah.
I got a ways to go. Absolutely. Yes.
Well, we'll give you a big, big welcome on Vashon. And for listeners who, if you don't have tickets, rush out and get them. And if the concert's already happened, it sounds like there's great music out there right now. There's going to be the great album. What's the name of your album in September again?
Reckoning.
Reckoning. That's great. And And there is this fabulous book, Saved by Song, for anyone who's interested in songwriting and healing and personal transformation and just being a better human on this planet. I can't speak highly. I've already given two books away already, and I'm giving away more because it's that good. So thank you so much for taking time out of your busy touring schedule. And I can't wait to hear you sing.
Nice talking with you today, Sally. You have a good one and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take good care. Bye now.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.